And we're back.
All right. We have returned to an open session. Again, today is Monday, October 20th, 2025. The time is 6:24. And we are going to make a correction to the name of the motion previously, which is the possible motion to enter closed session for the purpose of discussing head of school bonus for the 24 to 25 school year. So we're going to reflect that again in the agenda. And then right now we have a possible motion to approve head of school bonus for 2024 to 25. So we're approving for last year's scholastic year. So let's go ahead and move to that motion.
I'll try it again. I move to approve the head of school bonus for 2024 to 2025.
A second.
Perfect.
Excellent. Any discussion other than the fact that we had determined that we would provide the full bonus, which is a $5,000 payout? Mm-hmm. All approve?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Any opposed? Moves unanimously. Okay. All right. Falguni, we can go ahead and move into Finance Committee.
So for Finance Committee, I did send out the budget review to board last week. I hope you had time to go over it. And for now, it looks like fiscally we are, you know, in good condition. And the review document type, it may change because with the new system, we're still working on the what kind of structure we want to have it, and the finance training reminder. So I know you already done that. Thank you, Alexa, for completing your training. And I have to send you the second training link. And Lacey, I still am not able to find those documents in the drive. So if they may,
let me see if I can find. I know I've done mine, so let me look.
No, everyone else have done it, but I can't find the copy on, you know, latest.
I might have them just in my email. So I think people sent them to me.
Maybe we need to put it somewhere in the board drive, or if you can give me access, so, you know.
Oh, because you're the treasurer, so she needs access to the executive committee, right? To the, all those files, right? There's two levels of access, right?
No, I think it's just if you've got the password for the board or for the executive, the secretary.
So I just need to get that to her? No? Is that only for executive committee, though? And then the rest of the board?
Is executive committee.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yes. I haven't given that to her yet.
Yeah, let's do Kay. That.
I don't have it.
Let's see. I didn't.
I think you've got the certificates in the drive.
I'm looking at that. I don't think I do, but financial... It's a fraud risk, right? Assessment? Mm-hmm. Let me take a look. Okay. You can keep going. I'll just search for it while I'm here.
So that's about it, I guess. Mm-hmm. Short update.
And then even shorter update, because we don't have Becca today, so PR committee update is non-existent, other than I would just speak to the fact that we did supply the annual report for last year. It came out beautifully. And I think that the timing of that worked out really well to not tax the faculty and teachers and staff in general at the end of last year, but instead to pull it into this year, and it looked great. So it was a big achievement. Okay, so it takes care of us, the Finance Committee and PR Committee, and now we can go ahead and move into the most exciting portion of the evening, which is Policy Committee. Let me go ahead and pull up what we are covering today. All right, we are covering GC 1, 2, 3, and 4. GC 1 is the board purpose. The board holds itself accountable to the citizens of the state of Utah and the United States of America by ensuring that every action it takes is consistent with federal and state law, administrative rule, the school's charter, and the board's own policies. And the board is guided by the following principles. Clearly articulated educational objectives are the foundation of an effective school. Every student can develop intellectual agility. Every student learns in different ways. Students gain a sense of a unique calling by contributing to local, national, and global communities. An involved community promotes optimal student learning. Student engagement is key to personal growth and accomplishment. The board upholds these principles. And to help accomplish the vision of the school, which means Canning Hall students are agile learners who value other perspectives, who know how to learn, whose vision, passion, and unique abilities inspire them to achieve excellence and improve the world. GC2, governance commitment. The board will govern lawfully with primary emphasis on results for students, encourage full exploration of diverse viewpoints, focus on governance matters rather than administrative details. I feel like if we had a t-shirt, that is what it would say. Collaborate with administration to define the foundational framework that carries vision and practice, observe clear separation of board and head of school roles, make all official decisions by formal vote of the board, and govern with long-term vision. The board will function as a single unit. What this means is that, you know, to kind of break it down in layman's terms for us, that's why we don't respond to text messages or emails in smaller groups or even together, because we need to make sure that we're functioning as one single unit. And so conversations that take place as the board take place in these sessions. Although the opinions and personal strengths of individual members will be used to the board's best advantage, the board faithfully will make decisions as a group by formal vote. No officer, individual, or committee of the board will be permitted to limit the board's performance or prevent the board from fulfilling its commitments. The board is responsible for its own performance and commits itself to continuous improvement. To ensure the board's business meetings and study sessions are conducted with maximum effectiveness and efficiencies, members will come to meetings adequately, that was a difficult one, prepared and on time, speak when recognized, not interrupt each other, not engage in side conversations, not repeat what has already been said, not monopolize the discussion, support the chair's efforts to facilitate an orderly meeting, like helping to remember when we need to do roll call, which is awesome. Communicate openly and actively in discussion and dialogue to avoid surprises, encourage equal participation of all members, practice respectful body language, place emphasis on building consensus among members, seek the input of the head of school on issues as discussed and decisions are made. As stated by bylaws, board members' attendance at all meetings and working sessions will be monitored for compliance. We're almost done with this section. The board will use a constant agenda, and we update the agenda accordingly. The policies will be reviewed annually at board meetings, and review will include a discussion of content, practice, and ongoing relevance of each policy, and we do update our policies as needed. Operational expectations will be included as a key component of the annual review of the head of school, thereby being subject to annual review of content, practice, and ongoing relevance. The board will direct the organization through policy, and the board, by majority vote, may revise or amend its policies at any time. However, as a customary practice, the proposed policy review will be discussed at one session of the board prior to being approved at the subsequent board meeting, kind of like how we approve fees. Board job description, so section 3. Ensure that results are the dominant focus of the organizational performance. Advocate for Channing Hall, maintain constructive two-way dialogue, develop written governing policies which focus on results, operational expectation, governance culture, board head of school relationship, ensure accepted head of school performance through effective monitoring of the results, ensure acceptable board performance through effective evaluation of board actions and process, appoint an independent auditor to conduct the annual review of the financial condition, which we do religiously, and approve the comprehensive budget. All right, this one's a hefty one today. Section 4, Officers rules. The chair. The chair provides leadership to the board, ensures faithful execution of the board's processes, exercises responsibilities with integrity, reflecting the spirit and intent of the board's policies, and normally serves as the board's official spokesperson. The chair has the following specific authority and duties: monitor board actions to assure they are consistent with the board's own rules, conduct and monitor all board meetings and deliberations to assure the board discussion and attention are focused on board issues, refrain from repeating, summarizing, or disagreeing with a member's comments as discussion is facilitated, speak to issues in turn as do other members, permit discussion of action items during business meetings only after motion and second, recognize members in order for them to speak, not offer motions or seconds while serving as the presiding officer, communicate and enforce adherence to public comment expectations found in the handbook, assure the board meeting discussions are productive, and the chair board meeting using the authority normally vested in the chair as described in Robert's Rules of Order, lead timely board meetings, which we've been having pretty good at, make all interpretive decisions based on board policies, and represent the board as its official spokesperson. When necessary, sign all contracts, nominate members of the board for subcommittees, and on behalf of the board and in concert with the executive committee, develop proposed board meeting agendas consistent with the board's annual calendar. The vice chair, in the absence or inability of the chair, will have all the powers and duties of the chair. The vice chair will participate with the chair and the head of school in developing board meeting agendas, especially when you're the vice chair and the secretary. The treasurer's duties are found in the Channing Hall bylaws, and the secretary's duties are found in the Channing Hall bylaws. And we're almost there. Head of school, section 5 is the last one.
Do we need to revise this in frequent years or only when we make changes then?
Yeah, but we read them through here, and we come up, if there's changes that we see, then yeah, then we would go through the process of amending that. Mm-hmm.
And then review it for one meeting and then move it to the second meeting.
So if there's anything you see or questions about or think we should change, yeah.
So head of school accountability. The board considers head of school performance to be identical to the organizational performance, organizational accomplishment of the board's results, policies, and operation according to the values expressed in the board's components define the head of school's job responsibilities and are the basis of the head of school's performance evaluation. So to attempt to summarize here, the board will determine organizational performance. The board may acquire monitoring data on results and operational expectations, which is exactly what we did today with the RISE results and other results, by internal report in which the head of school submits information and certifies documents to the board, by external review, in which the external third party selected by the board assesses compliance, by board inspection, in which the whole board or a committee duly charged by the board formally assesses compliance with or reasonable progress on appropriate policy criteria. The consistent performance standard for operational expectations policy shall be whether the head of school has A, reasonably interpreted the policy in its subparts, B, complied with the provisions of the board policy being monitored. The consistent performance standard for results policy shall be whether the head of school has A, reasonably interpreted policies in the subparts, B, made reasonable progress towards achieving the board's defined results policies. 5, the board, I didn't get numbers for you, let's ignore that. The board will make the final determination as to the head of school interpretation if it is reasonable. All policies that instruct the head of school be monitored according to the schedule and by a method determined by the board and included by the board's annual work plan. The board may monitor any policy out of this defined sequence. The evaluation of the document will consist of a summary of the data derived during the year for monitoring the board's results and operational expectations, conclusions based on the board's prior action during the year relative to the head of schools, reasonable interpretation of each result policy, conclusions based upon the board prior action during the year relative to whether the head of school has reasonably interpreted and operated according to provisions of the operational expectation policies, an improvement plan addressing any deficiencies in the head of school toward achieving the results, an improvement plan addressing any deficiencies in head of school performance, or a summary of the head of school's strengths and weaknesses relative to the achievement of the results policy and identified priorities for the coming year. Nothing in this policy will be construed to imply in any manner the establishment of any personal rights not explicitly established by statute, board policy, or contract. All employment decisions regarding the head of school remain with the sole and continuing discretion of the board. All right. We did it. I will try to remember for next year how heavy this one is, and maybe we might want to move that around a little bit. All right, let me bring up Brian Carpenter. Broken Promise.
Greetings, Charter School colleagues. Dr. Brian Lee Carpenter here, bringing you BoardWiser, the unique monthly board development program I created specifically to help charter school boards govern more effectively. This podcast is number 3 of 12 in a series titled Navigating the Intersection of Governance and Management. The title of this podcast is Broken Promise. As a charter school board member, the taxpayers of your state and the parents of children enrolled in your school have placed a trust in you. That trust brings with it an obligation for you and the board as a whole to always act in the best interest of those you serve, to give due attention to all matters entrusted to the board's oversight, and to recognize that even though some authority has been vested in your board to carry out its responsibilities, it in turn operates under the authority of others. In governance speak, we call these three obligations fiduciary responsibilities or duties. Specifically, they are usually referred to as the duty of loyalty, the duty of oversight, and the duty of obedience. They are non-negotiable. Failure to fulfill them can result in charter revocation or non-renewal, as in this month's case in point, and in extreme cases, civil and criminal liability. Given the importance of fulfilling these three duties, then, let's briefly discuss a few of their implications for your board. Duty of loyalty. Your board should have policies which require all board members to abide by ethical conduct at all times when functioning as board members, and it should require every board member to annually disclose any conflicts or potential conflicts of interest in writing. Where such conflicts exist, the board should also have a policy requiring the member with the conflict to recuse himself from voting. All such recusals should be clearly recorded in the minutes. The board should be especially careful if board members and/or members of management are related to one another. The duty of oversight. The board should require management to regularly report data or other evidence indicating how well the school is performing. These reports should cover everything the board is responsible for overseeing, including, but not limited to, the school's student performance, financial position, compliance with statutes and regulations, risk management, enrollment, and so on. The board should evaluate all such reports versus rubber stamping them. Duty of obedience. Here are a few things the board and the school must obey. The U.S. Constitution, for example, religious secularism is not permitted in charter schools. All pertinent federal laws, state laws, regulations, local health and safety codes, and the school's own charter, bylaws, and policies. Besides reading the latter three documents, the board is wise to pursue regular training that helps it ensure that it is fulfilling its duty of obedience. And be sure to document all such training in the board's minutes. Doing so helps it prove that it made a reasonable effort to perform them, which is the standard under the law. Now, here are this month's board self-appraisal questions and recommendations. Number one, does your board have written policies such as those described in the section pertaining to duty of loyalty? Number two, does the board require and receive reports from management that help it adequately perform the spectrum of oversight described in the section on duty of oversight. Number three, is the board presently deviating from its charter, bylaws, or policies, or anything else under the section on duty of obedience? And now for this month's case in point, titled Broken Promise. The San Diego Unified School District Board, which authorizes 43 charter schools, voted August 2nd, 2011, to revoke the charter of one of the schools in its portfolio, Promise Charter School. What makes this particular revocation especially poignant and highly unfortunate is the fact that, according to one newspaper, Promise was one of the strongest academically performing charter schools in the state. The run-up to the district's decision is a somewhat convoluted story, with both sides, the district and the charter school, alleging corruption, incompetence, and misgovernance. At the onset of school problems, some of Promise's parents had even demanded a district investigation. The case is illustrative of many things, not the least of which is that revocation can result from non-compliance with statutory and regulatory requirements, even when a school is performing well academically. Given the school's academic performance, was it really necessary for the district to revoke the school's charter? Well, the answer is debatable, but the laundry list of non-compliance issues was a lengthy one. According to various media reports, Promise Charter School violated California's open meeting laws, failed to prevent inappropriate relationships between a male teacher and his female students, maintained faulty financial statements, violated legal requirements pertaining to student suspensions, violated its own rules about who should sit on its board, violated state laws pertaining to conflicts of interest, failed to report child abuse to CPS. Moreover, just a few months before the revocation, and what deserves to become a textbook example of what not to do if your authorizer is ever investigating your school, Promise's principal actually escorted the district's charter school manager off the premises, itself a violation of California's education code. This resulted in a sharply worded letter to the Promise Board of Directors ordering it to, quote, immediately confirm that the charter school will cease and desist from interfering with the district's rights and obligations in overseeing the charter school, end quote. The real losers are, of course, the 200 students who will now have to go to school elsewhere, probably a poorer performing one, which is a sad reality considering that it could have been avoided had the board understood and fulfilled its three fiduciary responsibilities. This concludes this month's podcast. If you've been listening to this in your board meeting, be sure to document it in the board's minutes along with any action that the board took as a result. My name is Dr. Brian Lee Carpenter, and thanks for listening.
You promised it everything. All right, any discussion? Okay, Dave, we can move into legislative report.
Yeah, there's, and again, I attend that meeting of the Utah Association of Public Charter Schools, and part of this report is to report on that meeting. There's many things that were brought up, but I'll just kind of focus on one thing that's relevant to charter, and it was relevant to what was being talked about before, the after school, and that is there's been an effort to get busing funding for charter schools. Right now, it's not allowed.
Mm-hmm.
And charter schools are a little odd because, you know, there's priority for kids nearby, but you can go out farther and farther if, you know, you're not full. So we could go out pretty far. So mostly busing, of course, is like not too close, but not too far. So it's for charters, especially since we're small, it's a little odd. I don't know how it would work exactly for our school. But anyway, that's out there. And so... I would predict that it's a matter of time before, you know, there might be some allocation for that. So just depending on how the economy's going. And but this Royce guy who heads up the UAPCS seems to be on this one. He's been talking about it for a while now. So that's something that we can keep our eye on. I don't know if it's going to pop up in this legislative session. I think it might take a while, but... that may or may not be relevant to what our school's doing. There might be a certain area that, for whatever reason, we target. Maybe it's a new area, young families, elementary mm-hmm. school kids, and we like market there and have a bus come every day. Area. That's kind of like a, maybe, or maybe close to, you know, a tech campus. be interesting to see what happens as they develop that point thing. Mm-hmm. That might be a little far out, but you know, having a bus there, because right now my understanding is it's just not allowed. So even if you wanted to do it for a charter.
So are the rules like different for high school, like charter and the, you know, K-8 charter schools?
I don't know. I would not think so.
Because
you're like aware that Summit has buses.
No, the Ames High School that runs in the Cottonwood Heights. I don't know if they utilize like, you know, Cottonwood schedule, but there was we were considering it for Avi, and he took a tour and stuff, and they do have a bus that, you know, brings kids from, like, there are two routes, like, on the west side and east side. And
I can look into that. Mm. But right now my understanding is that there's not funding for charter buses separately. It's not on the district level. I can look into that more, but the main takeaway is that that's one thing this lobby group is working on. And, you know, we might consider how that would fit in if there ever is funding, or seems more viable, you know, with growth or maintaining with the school, is demographics change. Mm-hmm. That's it.
That'd be nice.
All right.
Okay. That's it. Well, then, as there is no other business to cover today, the meeting is adjourned. 6:50.
Wow.